From now until I die, I'll be alive.
The author of that small poem about life was 5-year-old Elsbeth Jackson. But it could be you. The Author Is You, a Wisconsin School of the Air series about the process of writing creatively. Today's program is conducted by children's author Jacqueline Jackson.
Last spring, I was taking a walk around several blocks with Elsbeth, who was then 7 years old. And we were talking of this and that, and as we neared home, she sort of half skipping along, burst out for no reason at all. What I want to know is, what is the point of life? What is the point of life? I can't figure it out. Well, I told her that philosophers had been trying to figure out that question since man first began to think. I said that back in Sunday school, I had learned from the Westminster Catechism that the purpose of life was to glorify God and enjoy Him forever, and that various religions have variations on that sort of theme. And then I said that some people don't think there is any point to life, and that often makes people get discouraged and despair. Elsbeth was commenting on these things, too, as I went along. And I think towards the end I added, some people say, I don't know the point of life, except maybe living. And even though there's a lot of hard things about living, living is glorious, and I'm glad to have the experience of being alive. And I knew that these were sort of lame answers to the everlasting question, and I finally said, Elsbeth, what makes you glad to be living? What makes you glad to be alive? I don't know, she said, and she skipped along a few more sidewalk squares. And then she stopped and exclaimed, Demi! Now, Demi is her 18-year-old sister, whom she loves very much. And I thought, that's very beautiful, that a sister, that another person, makes life worth living to Elsbeth. I came across a paper of an older girl at the school where I teach, where she was writing an essay on things that she thought life was for, and that when she was little, she was happy with her toys, and then when she got older, she was happy with other things. She says, now it is contact with other persons which makes me happy. So even if the whole day goes by, if I can find one moment which made me happy, or one moment that I was able to make another person happy, then life is worth living. And then just the other day at the table, Jill, who is 14, burst out, just as Elsbeth had last spring, even though I hadn't said anything to her about Elsbeth's outburst. She said, what's the point of life? Why are we here? Well, knowing I'd be doing this program in a few weeks, I naturally pricked up my ears. In fact, I even grabbed a pencil and paper, which happened to be nearby, and scribbled in my lap, and the kids are used to me writing all sorts of things down, and so they didn't pay much attention to me. But instead of giving my own opinions in a long lecture, as I had to Elsbeth, I was a little wiser, and I said, well, what do you think? And Jill said, I don't know. That's why I'm asking you. And Megan, her 16-year-old sister, said, well, some people say we're put on earth to help our fellow men. And Jill said, but then why were they put here? And Megan said, to help you. Well, Jill didn't like this answer either. And she said, but then why was it ever even started? Wouldn't it have been a lot easier if it had never begun? And Megan said, easier for who? And Jill, getting very exasperated, said, "I don't know." My writing became illegible at that point, and I can't tell you Megan's answer. But then Jill said about why we are here. She said, "Maybe it was just one big mistake." And Megan said, "Can't there be no point? Can't you just do something for no purpose? Maybe we're just here for entertainment." Said Jill, "Well, who are we entertaining then?" Megan, "Ourselves." And Jill, back to the same question, "But then how did we ever even get started?" And Megan said, "Well, maybe it's like having a kid. You've experienced life and you want the kid to experience it. And so, therefore, you have a kid." And Jill burst out at that point, "Well, I'm sure glad I'm here." And there was other talk, Jill commenting that in life that we live like we're parasites till we're 18 or 20, meaning, you know, that you live off your folks or your family or you're dependent somehow on society, whereupon Megan added that you're a parasite till you die, meaning that we have to eat stuff off the earth and breathe the air and so forth. Elspeth, of course, asked, "What's a parasite?" And Jill finished up the subject by saying, "Well, I think the universe is one big paradox, and everything in it is smaller paradoxes." With Elspeth adding, "What's a paradox?" And Jill explained to her that a paradox was a puzzle or a contradiction or something that you really couldn't understand. And I thought to myself, even though living is a paradox, is a puzzle, that we don't understand it, that I was feeling good that Jill was able to say, "Well, I'm sure glad I'm here." I can't really answer the questions raised by the children or by myself, because this question bothers me too. What is the point of life? What is the meaning of life? Sometimes I think I know. Sometimes I'm pretty sure I don't know. I can give you some thoughts that I've liked or that might cast a little light on the subject, especially on what is it that makes life worth living? What is it that makes you glad to be alive? There's a poem by Grace Noel Crowell that says, "The day will bring some lovely thing. I say it over each new dawn. Some gay, adventurous thing to hold against my heart when it is gone. And so I rise and go to meet the day with wings upon my feet. I come upon it unaware, some sudden beauty without name, a snatch of song, a breath of pine, a poem lit with golden flame, high tangled bird notes, keenly thinned, like flying colors in the wind. No day has ever failed me quite before the grayest day is done. I come upon some misty bloom or a late line of crimson sun. Each night I pause, remembering some gay, adventurous, lovely thing." Then there's really the whole book of The Secret Garden, which is talking about the meaning of life and what is it that makes life worth living. But when I was talking to the kids last night about stories or books that contain this sort of thing, Jill said, "Well, what about the magic chapter in The Secret Garden?" Colin and Mary, you know, have been sickly, fretful, unhappy children, and they have discovered the secret garden. And in the garden, they are making the plants grow, helping them to grow, tending them, watching all sorts of life. And Colin, who thought he was going to die and has been in bed since he was a child, has changed his mind. "I shall stop dying," he said, "if I go every day to the garden. There is magic in there. Good magic, you know, Mary. I am sure there is." "So am I," said Mary. "Even if it isn't real magic," Colin said, "we can pretend it is. Something is there. Something." "It's magic," said Mary, "but not black. It's white as snow." They always called it magic, and indeed it seemed like it in the months that followed, the wonderful months, the radiant months, the amazing ones. Oh, the things which happened in that garden. If you have never had a garden, you cannot understand, and if you have had a garden, you will know that it would take a whole book to describe all that came to pass there. At first it seemed that green things would never cease pushing their way through the earth, in the grass, in the beds, even in the crevices of the walls. Then the green things began to show buds, and the buds began to unfurl and show color, every shade of blue, every shade of purple, every tint and hue of crimson. And the book goes on describing the garden and Colin's reaction to it. He saw it all, watching each change as it took place. Every morning he was brought out, and every hour of each day when it didn't rain he spent in the garden. Even gray days pleased him. He would lie on the grass, watching things growing, he said. If you watched long enough, he declared, you could see buds unsheathe themselves. Also, you could make the acquaintance of strange, busy insect things running about on various unknown but evidently serious errands, sometimes carrying tiny scraps of straw or feather or food or climbing blades of grass as if they were trees from whose tops one could look out to explore the whole country. And this was not the half of the magic. My own book, The Paleface Redskins, I think, is trying to describe this sort of magic, the magic of being alive. There's a scene where Marcy looks through the telescope and first sees the moon and then is shown Saturn, the planet. Far, far away, oh, millions of miles it felt like, hung a pale pink globe with rings surrounding it, all blurred together, like a spinning colored top. It seemed suspended in rapid motion. Saturn, she gasped. It's Saturn. Why, it's just like its pictures. She looked at the boy with shining eyes. He grinned. She bobbed under the telescope to look again. There it hung on a tilt, with its great rings, two light ones with a dark one in the middle, faint and fuzzy and incredibly beautiful. Saturn, she whispered. Saturn. That was my impression when I first saw Saturn through the telescope, and I was filled at that time with a tremendous wonder and awe and the joy of living and of being in the universe. And I tried to convey that when Marcy sees all these things through the telescope. And then in the next chapter, I have her sitting on a stump at the top of the hill after swimming, and she notices a wasp who is fighting, apparently, with a caterpillar, kills the caterpillar, drags the caterpillar down into a hole, and then covers the hole. And I've described it as I once saw it myself. The wasp jammed down the earth with her head and scraped in more from the outside. When the filling was level with the ground, she picked up a small pebble in her mouth and pounded till the spot was firm. Several times she scraped in more earth and hammered it till there was no sign that a hole had ever been there, and then she flew away. And Marcy flops down and looks at the spot and wonders what it's all about, and then she realizes, baby wasps! Hadn't the tribe found bugs and eggs together in a wasp's nest once? This wasp had been laying an egg, and the worm would be fresh food when the egg hatched. She grabbed a twig and then hesitated. No, she wouldn't dig it up. The wasp had worked hard, and now the job was finished and perfect. Marcy would leave the worm and the egg hidden there, a secret. Saturn spun to the surface of her mind from that shallow depth where for several days now it had been filling her with little spurts of gladness. She glanced at the blue sky. Somewhere up there, she knew, was the splendor spinning forever in the night. And right here in the ground, just as invisible, was another splendor. Saturn's bright disk revolved over the wasp's smooth, hammered spot. Marcy pondered. The planet and the wasp hole were the same magic feelings, really. But no, more than that, their very togetherness was new and awesome. One circled all the foreverness of space, the other you could hold in your hand. Yet you had to feel just as much to hold the tininess as you did the bigness. You didn't understand them, all of them, the big and the little, the miracles and the secrets, but they were all there inside of you, and you knew. All there inside of you, Saturn and the wasp hole. Marcy's stomach churned with a strange excitement. She was just a speck beside Saturn, yet over the wasp she towered like a giant. She was huge and little in herself. She couldn't understand herself wholly either, but it was a self that could contain both the hugeness of Saturn and the smallness of the wasp hole. And to look at her, who would suspect that? A secret in space and a secret in the ground, and inside of her, the most secret secret of all. And then I think maybe my favorite passage in the entire wonderful book of Charlotte's Web, which is also a book that is talking about the marvel of living, of being alive, of what is the point of life, is the very ending. Life in the barn was very good. Night and day, winter and summer, spring and fall, dull days and bright days. It was the best place to be, thought Wilbur, this warm, delicious cellar with the garrulous geese, the changing seasons, the heat of the sun, the passage of swallows, the nearness of rats, the sameness of sheep, the love of spiders, the smell of manure, and the glory of everything. I think maybe that's what I think of when I think of what is the point of life. The glory of everything. You don't understand everything. I don't understand everything, the big and the little, the miracles and the secrets. But they're all there inside of us, and we know about them, and there is a glory to the living. There is a glory in life. In our writing today, why don't you write down, if you can, what is the meaning of life? What is the point of life? I know that that's the hardest question, and it might be easier and it might be better to write down the things that you feel make life worth living. Is it people? Is it friends? Is it family? Is it some little story that happened recently? What is your glory of everything?
Author is You, a Wisconsin School of the Air series about the process of writing creatively. Today's program was conducted by children's author Jacqueline Jackson. These programs are produced by WHA Radio, a service of University of Wisconsin Extension.